Welcome once again to the Positive Herpes Podcast, the show where we spread positivity, knowledge, and passion like herpes. I'm your boy, Nate Cubs, and I brought to you what I think might be a really awesome episode today. For my listeners who tuned in last week and listened to evolutionary psychology, you might recall me mentioning to my friend Kevin Arose that one of the first things I remember about him was he liked to basically try to understand different forms of social dynamics and the way people interact with one another. The reason this is relevant is because my same friend Kevin once in a while likes to have basically these massive parties at his house, but they're not parties in the way you might typically think. What we do is we get a group of like 10 to 30 people, whoever can show up, and we all just share different knowledge, information, different things that we're doing with our lives. Sometimes it's just an open mic. There's definitely learning going on, lots of great people around, lots of great stories, lots of great food. And today's episode is going to be a recording. We're going to listen to my buddy Chris talk about memory and information. Now, like I said, there is a pretty good group of us, so you will hear a lot of people in the background, and which I kind of like because there are parts where Chris asks us direct questions, and you can hear people ask those questions. There may be a few people who you can't hear, but Chris does a pretty good job of reforming the question in his answer. So without further ado, let's learn about memory and information.
Okay. Hey, everybody. I'm Chris.
Hi.
I want to talk about memory and information today because I became fascinated with this when I was a classical musician, and you have to learn these like long sequences of notes and patterns and stuff, and they're way too big to like fit in your head all at once. So it became a sort of like tinkering hobby. How do I, how do I fit more things into memory, and how do I efficiently pull them out? But before I get into any of that, I kind of want to just have a simple exercise. I think it'd be pretty fun and interesting. Michelle actually gave me the idea for it. The idea is there's like point A, point B is like two words or concepts or something. And what we're going to do is pair up, and I'm going to give you the point A, and then you're just going to talk about whatever it is, like free associate, just have a conversation about whatever comes to your mind for like 2 or 3 minutes. And then I'm going to ask you to stop at some point. And then we'll go from there. Okay. So, let's say the first word, pick a partner, and then, you got a partner?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's be partners. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So point A is the word is mother. And so go ahead and start, talk about whatever you want. Just start with that. Just the word. Anything, like it could be your mother, someone, an abstract mother, like motherfucker. I mean, whatever you want. So,
quality time.
Quality time. Like you want to spend quality time with your mom?
When I get a chance to, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does she live around here?
No, she lives in Las Vegas.
Oh, so it's a little bit of a. So you got like you only have a limited time with her, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so exactly. Like when I get a chance to see her, I try to just be there with her.
Yeah, it's sort of like almost one of those things like it doesn't matter what you're doing, just that you're together.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just talking to my mom. She was crying because I'm leaving for Argentina soon, and I don't know when I'm going to be back. And so she's like, you know, how am I going to see you? You're not even in the same country now. And
right.
And so she was pretty upset, but I think I'll come back to the States now and again. And but yeah, it's a deep connection. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's tough. Like my mother has like an autoimmune disease.
Oh no.
So sometimes it's difficult to be around. But at the same time, like, you know, she sacrificed a lot for her family, and I feel like when I'm there, you know, my way of repaying her for all she's done for me and my sisters is that I can just be there for her and,
yeah,
you know, share what I'm doing with my life and ask her how she's doing. She's pretty rad. Like, she does a lot of gardening, so sometimes I'll help her out in the garden.
Yeah. So, you can kind of share hobbies with her and, or just sit with her.
Or just sit with her, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah, I only get to see my mom every couple of years or so.
Okay.
But when she comes out, we always try to do lots of fun things together.
Rad. So where does she live?
North Carolina. So
okay.
It's a bit of a ways to get here.
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to stop now. Hey, everybody. Okay, stop. Yeah. Okay. Great job, everyone. Okay, so what... Like, take a note of what your point B was. Like, where did you end up at? If you could just summarize in, like, one word. And you can share it if you want. Maybe you never left mother. I don't know.
Primordial origins.
Primordial origins? That's awesome.
The last note.
Yeah. So, what about y'all?
What point B was?
Yeah, what point B did you end up at?
Gosh. Last thing I... wondering why my parents aren't divorced now.
We love you, Jenny.
Real.
So and then we ended up at spending quality time with mothers and then what about?
We kind of wound our way around to the Shiva Shakti male female aspect that is present in all things.
Okay.
Mother being nature. Birthing.
And then, mothers is these birthing stargates.
A vagina to another dimension.
Vagina stargates!
What about y'all? Y'all want to share?
We started off, associating with, Mother Nature. And
Mother Earth.
Yeah.
And said basic words that described what a mother was to us. And then we just ended the conversation, which was, when was the last time you spoke with Mom?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So that's great. So we all have point Bs, and they're all mother themed, but they're all in kind of different directions. And so now the next part of it is talk to your partner again, see if you can retrace your steps through that conversation. How did you get from point A to point B? Right? Because does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
We kind of danced around.
Backwards or forwards?
Either way. Okay. That's a good question because I think there's different advantages and disadvantages for each direction. But I think you started with, you started with talking about quality time with your mom and just being with her. And then I think I asked you where she lived.
Correct.
And then it was Las Vegas. And so it was like limited time. But she said that she has an autoimmune disease, and then there was she's just gardening, and so sometimes you garden with her, or sometimes you just be with her. And she felt like she had put a lot into the family, and like she was very giving, and so you felt like you wanted to repay that to her. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna go backwards.
Okay.
So, we ended. With me asking you where your mother lived in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And that her coming out here to California is, the visits are kind of few and far between because there's a lot of physical distance. And that you guys like to spend a lot of activities together, or do a lot of activities together when she's here. And basically on the same thread of quality time, which is, that stemmed from me saying that when I get a chance to spend time with my mother, I try to make it quality time because it's not there. The frequency of time isn't there all the time.
Yeah. So I think we got the chain connected.
Yeah. I think you started off, ended up out about midway, and I took it from the other way and brought it back in.
That's pretty cool. It's like a bunch of... Yeah. Okay. So let's see. How do you think... maybe we give people a few more seconds. I think we did it a little faster.
Yeah.
It's interesting though. You try trace back through the conversation.
I think it was super easy with ours because we were speaking on our specific mothers, whereas everyone else took it into more abstract ideas.
That's true. Yeah.
So just saying that it was a little easier because for us it was both very close to home.
Yeah, it was like things that were definitely already there. We just had to look at what was already there, not and then
instead of tracing ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, that is more challenging. You're right. So how does it? Does everyone feel like? It looks like everyone's still talking, so maybe I'll just. Y'all feel like you were able to trace back through?
Yeah, we traced it. We traced chat files.
Oh, okay. Okay. So that was just the exercise, basically, to try to retrace a conversation. Does it?
Bring it in.
Yeah. How do y'all feel like y'all were able to trace through the conversation?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why.
Okay.
Yeah, so we kind of like retrace how we got to what we're talking about. We started with like feelings, relationship to the mother, and then like the origin being like the identity creation from her. And that was like the common thread.
So did y'all, did you feel like you went from the beginning to the end? Or
it seemed easier for us to do that, start at the beginning.
Yeah, we did start at the beginning, went to the end.
Did anyone else start at the end? Y'all start at the beginning?
We started at the beginning.
Yeah. Is Nathan and I
started at the end and looped back to the beginning,
and then got all the way to the end again.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah.
You Quentin Tarantino'd it.
Yeah,
a
little
bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Nathan and I
like holding both ideas in our heads simultaneously.
Like the point A and B.
Yeah.
And then you like where you trace the path.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, there are all kinds of different ways to do it. Nathan and I kind of like started.
It was like an unspoken, like awesome pathway that we took. So I started for the first exercise, and he ended on the first exercise. But on the second exercise, you started at the beginning of what I was saying, and I finished the second exercise by starting at the end and working backwards to what you were saying.
Yeah, so
and we met
in the
middle.
It was cool.
Was that intentional or not?
No, it just naturally happened. It was organic.
Yeah. So this was just meant to be, you can kind of like, there were these like overlapping circles, right? Every like, maybe you couldn't hold the whole conversation in your head all at once, but each piece sort of reminds you of the adjacent pieces.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we talked about this, and that, then after that, it was like this, or how did we get onto that topic? Oh, it was because we were led into here. And so I find that like a really interesting technique. Or to do with people, to just investigate in memory. I think it also improves memory. Particularly, I found if you do this with people while you're high on marijuana, it, you know, because that's like something where people usually associate, this impairs my memory. And I think it does in the sense that you've got like your energy is more dispersed. It's easier to sort of like free associate onto like distantly related things. And so you got more energy sort of flowing in multiple directions. But I think it is definitely possible and valuable to sort of like try to trace back through these things, and because it's like a lot of times you learn all kinds of interesting stuff when you're just like you're flowing, and then you look back like, how did we get here? Like, wow, those two things are related.
Wow.
You know, because things are, you know, any two things are they have things in common. There's things that are different about them. I think it's like, you know, valuable to kind of like look at things as the same and different, you know, at different times. But I'm curious to hear more. Like, does anybody have like a working definition of memory that they use? Is like, it's kind of an abstract idea, but people generally, I think, feel comfortable with using the word.
I like this idea of stuff being like primed. So our memory doesn't seem to be infinite in the fact that like there's just like a file drawer and it's like, oh, June 7th, 1993, Kevin ate cereal for breakfast, fruit, a little too much milk. Like there's nothing, that kind of memory. You know, you just kind of go like, oh, what were the 90s like? And you're like, dude, Fruit Loops were delicious. It's like this more like, I don't know, I guess it can depend on the person, but memory seems to me to be, you know, there's like long term and short term. You have like kind of this working memory, it's like a sketch pad, so I can hold like this many things in my head while I'm doing something. But there's also this kind of long term memory where I can go back and be like, oh, that's what this was like, and you kind of have like this vague priming to get there, and then you can really unpackage that, and like someone questioning you or kind of trying to trace the thoughts, you can explore it further.
Yeah.
So it seems to be very like, kind of, it's like, it's very dynamic. It's not just, you know, photographic recall in most people.
Yeah,
most
people do. I think that flashback memory is extremely powerful too, or flashbulb memory, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can everybody remember the first time they heard the news about 9/11?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
remembers
yeah.
exactly what
right.
they were, where they
yeah.
were, what they were doing, and I think, you know, that's really powerful, right?
And everything that led up before that moment and afterwards.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can usually
Precisely.
Remember plus or minus, you know, a
but
certain degree of.
Do you think it was because it was such a powerful moment, or because we've been asked to recall that moment so many
over
times?
Over
like, are we actually remembering the instance, or are we remembering remembering?
Yeah, I think it's twofold.
Yeah.
I think it's twofold. It was a powerful moment, and then, you know, we've talked about, I'm sure that, you know, people in their views on that specific event have been, you know, have talked about that and recalled it, maybe more so than some of these, you know, December 1st, Kevin had cereal. Some of those events, you know, some of those minor events that, you know, it's just kind of, you know, pushed aside or removed, you know, for more important things.
Well, do you have any other flashbulb memories that you'd like to share?
I mean, yeah, there's a few. Like, I remember, like, scar stories, right? Like, how I got some of my scars. I remember those like they were yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember how I dislocated my right knee last spring.
Mm-hmm. You injured yourself?
I dislocated my right
yeah.
knee.
Yeah. I remember I had this weird experience when I was 3 years old. I was with my dad in the car in the parking lot of this mall, and I looked over and I just had this thought pop into my head, I'm going to remember this forever. And I did. And I mean, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, but, you know, because I like keep thinking back to it and be like, wow, that's amazing that I still remember that. But it
was profound
less...
for a three-year-old.
So, I don't know what possessed me, because I don't think I remember other people saying that, but
flashbulb sensations too. It's like,
yeah,
there's like feelings
yeah.
that I've had where I'm just like, whoa, like, and I was in the moment, and then for whatever reason I just like remember the feeling, and it's just like really there with me. And I found that it's actually weird because it's like random.
Yeah,
it's like this like one sensation, just like driving home from school and playing this song with my friend, and it just felt like really good and really weird at the same time. I don't even know how to describe it. I don't know if there's quite a word for it or what it would be, but I like know it. And whenever like I hear that song, it takes me back there, and it's just like so there. It's just like a.
So it's like not even necessarily something super important, like
mm-hmm.
like a world changing event. It's
mm-hmm.
just.
It was definitely like a flashbulb. Like
huh.
It just like, I think that's what they are. They like things that really stick with you,
mm-hmm.
or these types of memories like that.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. Anybody else?
Yeah. Does anyone have any insight on dementia or Alzheimer's, since we're on the topic of memory? Does anyone have any thoughts, or can I bring that to the...
I mean, you're welcome to bring it. I don't know that much about that.
Does anyone...
She's asking about Alzheimer's or...
Yeah, my grandma is, you know, progressively getting worse and worse, and you know, she still recognizes all of us, but, you know, it's hard to hold a conversation with her. Because she forgets things so quickly.
Are there aspects of your grandmother's life that you can remember when she had her memory?
Oh, yeah.
And how was she like? What did she do on a daily basis?
She's amazing.
Where did she live? What did she eat? Did she have a huge friend network? I mean, all of these factors, I think, play into that role of losing one's memory. Can you describe what your grandmother did?
I just always remember her being more loving than any grandmother I could have ever asked for. She's just a sweetheart. What's that?
How did she portray that to you? Through her energy?
Just through her love, you know? Touch. Feel. Just being there. Coming to my sporting events.
Mm-hmm.
Being present in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, one thing I do remember reading about dementia and Alzheimer's is that I think it was that it can be that if you do like memory games or memory exercises, that it can combat some of the age-related memory decline. And so it does seem to be like a muscle that you can work out if
mm-hmm.
but I imagine there's probably limits to that, you know, if you're like if there's physical issues.
It's more of just like maintaining.
Are you talking about
That would be an example of like things you could do, but I think yeah, there's also I think even doing simple things like learning a dance move or learning a musical song or something.
I'm more so curious about what people that do suffer from dementia or Alzheimer's, what their previous life was like, specific details of what they did on a typical day, how they fed themselves. It sounds like your grandma was very community involved in the family because she was always there for your sporting events. But I'm curious about all the whole spectrum of what these people that are suffering with dementia now.
Is it out of a curiosity for what might be causes for it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
And that's why I asked you if you had any more information. Just curious because all of us are thriving and healthy individuals, but we were able to recall how we got from point A to point Z when we had a conversation about the word mother. And it's just something for us to think about.
Yeah,
and
we're sort of all memory privileged in here.
And how to preserve this and to preserve memory, I think it's important to figure out what it is that we can do.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I want to still be able at 107 to have a conversation with people right now and know each and every person's name in this room. That's the only reason why I brought up the subject, because we're on the topic of memory.
Yeah, well, it goes hand in hand with forgetting, right? And
yeah,
it's interesting, like, what does it feel like to forget something?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like
frustrating.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Yeah,
it's like trying to grip onto something slippery.
It's right there.
Yeah. I kind of imagine it being like this thing. There's like a bunch of neighboring things that you can remember, but there's a conspicuous gap. That's like one type of forgetting, I guess. There's also like you can forget that you forgot something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you even forgot the context, and then it's pretty
yeah
hard to reconstruct all that, I think, unless
mm-hmm
there's some kind of trigger.
There's also tons of like false memory things.
Mm-hmm.
Just like all the time, I had one the other day where I thought I took my phone to the bathroom and I was like, I remember my phone being on the shelf. And then it literally went like a span of just like a couple of steps and I couldn't find my phone and I was searching for hours and hours and I was like, but it was here. And like, and then I went back to where I started and it was like fell on the step.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like I thought that I had taken it to the bathroom, but it like fell and I
oh,
didn't
yeah
take it, and I like constructed that in my mind that I put it there. So it's like oftentimes, and we're probably not we don't realize how often we do that, you know. You're like, no, like I just like did this, but you didn't at all, but we're constantly like filling in our own stories with memory, and
mm-hmm
it's also really based on your own perception of the event. It's just such an interesting thing, because I was like certain that I took my phone there, and then when it wasn't there, I came up with this whole bunch of other crap, like, so, I don't know, but, yeah.
It is interesting, because it's like memory is deeply related to imagination,
mm-hmm,
and
yeah,
instructive. And yeah, yeah, and then there's, and I think good place to look at this is dreams, right? Dreams, a lot of times they feel like they draw on the things from your life, your memories, but they're new collages, things that you haven't seen before exactly. And I think, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about different kinds of memory, because we use the word memory in a lot of different places, and I think it kind of helps, you know, if we look at all those places, we can kind of suss out what is the thing we're pointing at when we say the word memory. And I think there's a, you know, really interesting story. Human memory is like the one we're most familiar with, but it's also kind of like we're embedded in it all the time. So it's a little bit of a biased perspective. You know, there's an interesting story about Tesla, Nikola Tesla, the inventor, and he had some interesting experiences. One of which was he said that when he was a child, he would think of an object, the image of that object would fix itself in his mind, and it would be such a vivid image that it would superimpose over his surrounding experience, and he would become frustrated. He was like essentially blind from that point of view, and the only thing he could find to do to change it would be to replace it with another image, but this was happening when he was very young, so he felt like he would just have to sort of shuffle through all the things he knew of, and he just run out. Didn't know what else to think of, and when he was stuck in these sort of like imagination loops, and so he eventually decided to try to imagine new things. And he said at first it was very fuzzy and not very detailed, but he would keep working at it until finally he had like very high resolution dreams while he was awake. And he said that when he was doing his inventions, he would simulate the creation of these inventions in this laboratory in his mind, such that he would, whenever he would physically create these things, he would almost never have an issue that he hadn't simulated beforehand, which I think is an incredible story. But, you know, it even more interesting is later in his life, he had this sort of like psychotic break of like hypersensitivity of being able to like hear and see things that were very far away. And at some point, his nervous system relaxed after a few weeks. And then afterwards, he said he was able to sort of just turn on memory and turn it off, and that he would just read a book full of like mathematical formulas and be able to recite it perfectly after reading it once. And so, you know, this is a very extreme and extravagant kind of story. And maybe it's not totally true, but it does suggest that there's something, you know, that it's like this relationship between dreaming and memory is important, because I mean, it's a lot of people talk about dreams as like memory consolidation, sort of like you have all this data that pours into your mind through the day, and then, you know, some of it's like y'all were saying, more important than others, and so you can kind of like, you know, sift through it, and narration, a narrative is a great way to summarize and encode things. It's like, that's, you know, like spiritual teachers, like Jesus was always talking in parables, right? And it's not necessarily because the story itself was so important, but because it's like a mnemonic device. It's very easy to remember those things. And you can kind of interpret dreams as doing that too. And so, yeah, but there's also another kind of memory. You talk about computer memory, right? And so, and that's like, you know, it's little magnetic rods or like capacitors, and like they're either charged or uncharged, and that corresponds to a one or a zero. And then, and so you just got this like giant array of ones and zeros. And but, you know, it's interesting when we take it out of the context of the human mind, those ones and zeros by themselves don't mean anything to us, right? We have to have a language to interpret it through before it gains meaning. So it's some sort of like, it's almost like the thing doesn't exist on its own, this idea of memory. And but then if that counts as memory, then, you know, what else is memory? Is DNA memory? You know, if you have this, yeah, she's saying yes, right? It's like it's in some sense it's encoding the lessons of your ancestors in this kind of, you know, sculpting way, where there were lots of potential cousins you could have had, and only some of them survived long enough to the present day, and
not just in the code itself, but the way the code is packaged.
Yeah, there's it's, you're right, it's not just the A, C, T, G, but lot of the machinery around that.
Yeah, what pages are allowed to, you know, that you're allowed to open up to and whatnot.
Right, because there's like some masking on it too, right? There's like methylation and things like that. So it seems like there's this like sort of repeated theme of there's like this, like, many possibilities, and then there's like a filtration or like a selection down to fewer things, right? There's like and like in the human development, when you're, you know, go through, I forget which age it is, I think it's in puberty, or maybe pre-puberty, your brain goes through massive cell death, because you have, it's sort of like you have all possible connections, and then you tear away the ones you don't want. So it's like, instead of creating something from nothing, it's sort of like carving away from everything. And so this is evidenced in things like, you know, babies from all different cultures can learn how to make the language sounds of any language, but then before a certain age, and then after a certain age, they seem to unlearn it, and it becomes much more difficult. Mm-hmm. But probably not impossible. In fact, almost certainly not impossible. But so that's like, you know, there's this like this carving and this the same sort of like methylation thing. You know, all the cells in your body have this expression of the entire body's genome, but they put a filter over it, right? They don't express everything in it, and so it's sort of like the white light laser in the disco ball. But tied up on all this is information, right? It's like somehow there's a relationship between memory and information, and I don't know, does anyone have like a definition for, oh, you want to ask something?
I just have a quick question.
Yeah.
Is this like so just thinking about this, it's the fact that almost thinking that all the information that exists out there is already in you almost.
I mean, that would be like a sort of more zoomed out way of thinking about it, but yeah,
you feel like I've had that feeling before.
I mean, it's like in mysticism they talk about like the Akashic Records, the sort of library of all knowledge.
Yeah, just the fact that like everything that you need to know is already inside you and through experience. It's not that you're actually learning that, it's more that you're like unlocking.
Mm-hmm.
Does that, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. everything's already there. Mm-hmm. It's not that you have to, like, really...
put stuff in. Is it?
Yeah, it's not that you're putting stuff in. It's more that you're just kind of, like, through experience and awareness, you just realize things that, like, almost already knew intuitively. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
It's definitely an interesting idea. I mean, that's like when ancient Greeks, I think, believe the word for education literally meant, like, sort of reminding.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's definitely this sense, because there's like this reflection, right? Things happen out there, and there's like patterns and structure, and then they get reflected in the mind. They get encoded in a language, though, right? So it's I don't know. So does anyone have like a working definition of information they'd like to share?
Negative entropy. Yeah. It's the absence of chaos as a coherent signal.
Okay.
It's I don't know. At its most basic level, information is just anything that can be detected. It's like a detectable signal. So like the first information was like white hot plasma and like excited atoms, as opposed to just kind of the negative space of, you know, whatever, the dark matter cloud or whatever it was before the Big Bang.
Yeah, I think there is something in there related with like entropy and physics and heat and something. Does anyone else want to share anything?
I was thinking like a package of knowledge.
It's like a package.
Is what information is. There is this like packaged quality to it, I feel like.
So, but do you feel like if I like take the same information that I wrote, like say I package it in a book, and then if I like write it in a different ink on a different page, is it like the same information or is that different information?
It's the same information.
So it's interesting because it seems to indicate that the information is like agnostic to the medium.
Right.
Is that does that vibe with y'all too?
So you're asking if it's the same information?
Yeah, could you have the same information in two different mediums?
Well, yeah, I think you can. Written information is interpreted and understood in a different capacity or perspective than video information, or experiencing that information, you know, through some live experience, as opposed to reading it. You know what I'm saying? So to relate this to my life is, you know, with my involvement with ET3 is, you know, I've read the patents. I get the information on the paper. I get the symbols that are, you know, made up into words, that are made up into sentences that help describe or outline something. But when we were in Colorado actually doing something with it, there was a whole new view of the same information. It was more of a hands-on, you know, analog version of that information.
So like that was an example of like information expressed in two different ways that really made a big difference how it was being expressed.
Exactly.
Yeah, and to build off of that, I mean, Dee's been studying ET3 for 5 years. I've been doing this for like 5 months. So, you know, he was in LA or San Francisco, I'm in Salt Lake City, and he's explaining to me what we're actually going to Colorado to build, and I'm like, you know, slowly getting a grasp on it. But it wasn't until we actually went to Colorado and built our prototype until I finally, you know, understood fully what we're doing.
Yeah, I think that words can take you far, especially if you have no knowledge on the topic that's being presented. But I think that actual experience, and this is probably on an individualistic basis, right? Because people absorb information through different mediums, you know, at certain accuracy levels. But for me, I'm a hands-on, got to see it, got to touch it, got to do it kind of person to really, you know, take in the full experience and understand exactly what the words are trying to explain.
It kind of like synthesizes the essence out of it.
Yes, thank you for throwing that into a phrase.
Yeah.
Well said.
Thank you.
Exactly. It's synthesizing the words into relatable real world experience. And I think that has a more profound effect on me than just reading. Because you can read stuff and stand on the shoulders of giants and see, you know, far past anything that you could prior to reading it. But actually doing something with your hands, or, you know, actually creating something or bringing those words to life in some sort of experience, it plays a more profound role in my ability to, you know, not only understand the material myself, but to be able to explain it to another person.
That's interesting. Does anyone feel like words are more important to them than personal experience for learning things?
I feel like there's a difference between, like, understanding something and realizing something. Like, maybe it sounds like back when you were first hearing about the project you were doing, you were getting information over the phone and you were understanding what that meant, but you didn't fully realize exactly what you were doing until you had done it yourself and put it into motion and created what you wanted to create.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a very visual learner, so it's hard for me to really soak up information through my ears and then retain that. It's not until I see it that I really get it.
Right, when you're reading those research papers, it seems like whoever wrote those things had some kind of personal experience with it, I assume. And then it's sort of like it almost completes the loop when you turn it into a personal experience.
Yeah.
They were just sort of like pointing the way. Like, hey, if you do these steps, then you'll probably have this cool experience that I'm, you know, you should go try or something.
Right.
But yeah, so I think there's, you know, I'd like to share, there's an interesting mathematical definition of information, and it's not, you know, it's not like the true definition or the right one or anything like that. It's just it's a way of kind of like narrowing it down so it's easier to formalize, and it does have some interesting intersections with how we use the word in English too. And it's interesting that you brought up entropy, because it's the unit of measurement is in entropy in the mathematical definition. And what it's trying to, what the definition is, I'm not going to give it to you, but what it's trying to the negative summation of log of the probability of an event times the probability of the event. So the idea is that it's trying to encapsulate how surprising something is. So it's kind of like it's like how much information is included in this variable, or it's almost like a question. You know, if you ask a question, how much, what's the maximum amount of information, or almost what's the information contained in that question? And so it's like when things are more surprising, then that's more information in some sense. And so if say you're like, the question is like, I'm gonna flip a coin and does it land heads or tails? And if, imagine I have two coins I'm doing that with, and one is rigged and almost always lands on heads, like 99% of the time. Right, it's sort of like not that surprising. You might think it would be surprising when it lands on the 1% chance, right? But in general, it's not a surprising event. It's like you can generally ignore that coin because you can just retrieve from your memory what it's going to be. Whereas if it's a fair coin, it's like your memory isn't really such a great predictor of it, right? You've got this you know, maybe it was tails last time or heads last time, and that doesn't really give you much information about what it's going to be next time. And so it's the reason they called it entropy when they created this construction was because it did behave a lot like the thermodynamic quantity called entropy, and which is, you know, it has a lot of different ways you can look at it. I think the most interesting way, the easiest way I understand is that it's like you've got this the total heat of something, and some of that heat is sort of internalized into the like the bonds and like structures and relationships, and it's kind of like encoded in matter. Some of that energy is encoded in matter, but some of it's just vibration, and it's like stuff bumping up against each other, and it's like, and that stuff you could like funnel into usable work, right? And so that's like temperature. When something's hot, it's because it's like vibrating up against you, and your skin's like, whoa, and so that. But over time, entropy increases, so that you have the transfer of this energy from this externalized form of vibration into more like internalized structural form. So it's almost like you can think of it as this like crystallization process, which in some sense you can think of, you know, switching from heat into information. It's like when you have the information, you've like it implies a language, and so you've expressed it. It's like a sentence, or like at least, or a web of things that sort of like becomes a thing. It gains an identity. It's not just like this white light. You've like filtered it out, and now it has its own color. Or it's like it's not just the marble slab. You've actually like carved out a person or out of it. And so does that make sense? I know it's kind of like far out. Cool. Yeah. So I think, you know, thinking of things is like that is interesting. And yeah, but there's also this sort of like evolutionary process to it, right? Because it's like things like Dee was saying, there's things happen, lots of things happen, and you don't remember all of them. And in fact, you know, it probably the reason you don't is because it's not really a good idea to try to hold on to, like, you know, it's like you're saying, you know, Monday I had exactly at this point, you know, this many Cheerios in my mouth, and then I crunched, you know, and then it was delicious. Right, so you could go into arbitrarily high detail with any of these things, but it's like how valuable is that to your life? And so there's this like natural selective process of the memories getting like filtered out through your dreams, and then they and get rehashed, and a lot of times get compacted and compressed, right? So you're not even really, like, I think it was Keanu was saying, you're not really remembering things in this, like, absolute perfect sense. It's this kind of, like, useful heuristic that sometimes will smash several things together if it's been a long time. I remember, you know, sometimes even, like, talking with my mom about things that happened a long time ago, we'll have very different versions, but they'll, you know, it'll be like, oh, I thought the day that this happened was the same as this day. And she's like, no, 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 they were in different days, because it was, like, actually different years that those things happened. And it's like, wow, okay, I was supposed to smash those things together. And so it's, I think that distinction between the representation of the thing and the thing itself is important, to, like, not take the memories and the pointers too seriously. But I think, you know, unless somebody else wants to talk about something else for a little bit, I'd like to, like, share memory techniques that I have found that are interesting. Yeah. Make it a little more practical and less theoretical. So one, I think, is the amount of attention you put into something kind of is like how deeply you're encoding it, right? So, like, if you never experience it, you're not going to be able to remember it because you never put it in there. And so you know, this idea of, like, learning by osmosis, like, I think there's something to that, but you know, when you're focusing on something like if I'm trying to read text and remember, if I want to remember, like, a poem that I wrote, then one of the things I can do is, like, you know, I want to pour more attention into it. So it doesn't even matter, like, I don't have to pour attention necessarily into just the semantic content. It could be the representation. Like, what does the paper look like? Are there little, like, fuzzy little dots on it? Or is it like thick paper? Is it, like, bleached white? Is it, or, and, like, how does the ink look? Or all the letters in this word, do the letters tend to hang down below the line, or do they tend to, like, crop up above the line? Right. And so there's all these different little details that aren't important in the sense of, in, like, the semantic content of if it's words or that sort of thing. But they are they do sort of trick you into pulling more of your mind power into it. Yes. And the same sort of thing can happen if it's a speech thing. You can vary lots of variables in terms of, like, you know, you talk softly, you talk louder, and then you can, you're, like, kind of, like, make a weird accent while talking slow. And this all kind of, like, it's novel, right? It's new information. It was unexpected. And so the mind sort of just gravitates towards these. It's like, this, I was predicting that things were going to go this way, and they're actually a little bit different. So let me, like, take a look at that, because, like, my prediction sucked. And so you can kind of, like, leverage that kind of blind curiosity that the mind has, and into pull more attention into things. And I think also, like, switching sensory modalities. If there's something that, like, if you're used to doing it, if you sort of, like, highly developed one modality of learning, then it can be valuable to sort of shut that one off. It's like when blind people end up developing extremely acute senses of hearing, where they can determine the shape of a room by, like, smacking their cane on the ground, things like that. And the reason you can do this, some people say, like, oh, I'm this kind of learner, and there's some truth to that, because it's like you cultivate certain things more than other things. But the neocortex looks the same across the neocortex, which is, like, the part of your brain that's, like, about learning and is sort of, like, where, if you're going to say intelligence was somewhere in the brain, it would be in the neocortex. And it's agnostic to the sensory modality that's coming in. So, like, what, you know, you have this, like, the nerve fibers coming from your ears and coming from your eyes and coming from your nose. They're all coming from different places. They look really different. They're, like, encoded at different frequencies and all these things. But by the time they make it to the neocortex is just homogenous. It doesn't care where the data came from. It uses the same kind of learning algorithm on it, regardless. And so then this is evidenced by, you can do things like blind people can learn how to see through their tongue. By they put, like, a camera on people's heads, and then they take the output of that camera, which is, like, this electrical signal, you know, it's like this pattern on the wire, and they output that onto their tongue. And then and then they look around, you know, and then they get this, like, different kind of sensational array of sensation on their tongue, and they look around and they get different information as they look around, and they can associate that with touching and all this stuff. And they can, after a while of doing this, their brain just figures out how to turn this sense into information.
I actually just heard of this guy who he's been blind since he was, like, 3, and he uses sonic, like, echolocation, he goes,
yeah. Oh, wow.
And he like picks up the vibrations of everything. And he said after doing this for years and years, he's actually at a point now where he has a good grid in his brain of like the way that things bounce back at him. He sees fuzzy images of everything he clicks at.
Wow.
So just to add.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's like, you know, so you could imagine leveraging this for like all kinds of interesting stuff. Like if you wanted to take a sense that humans can't normally feel, like, I don't know, a color that's out of our eyes range. You know, you could plug that into the brain, and then after a while, the brain would be like, okay, this is information. I'm just going to learn on it. And I think that like in a really important like psychological aspect of like improving memory and like mental abilities is like removing the self-limiting ideas. You know, there's like people have a lot of stories that get built up by like parents or teachers or religion or like whoever, like, and then, you know, I can't do that. I'm just not that kind of person. I could never, you know, and a lot of that has a self-fulfilling prophecy aspect to it. And so, you know, I just can't remember things. My memory is terrible. Like people tell me, oh, I can't remember names. And like what I hear is no, I'm just not going to try to remember your name. Because, you know, people talk about forgetting. What does forgetting really mean? It means I stopped looking for it. Like, I mean, you could probably keep find it if you kept looking. And how would you know if you would never find it? Like, it's not even like philosophically possible to know that, like, you would never find it. What's another interesting? So chunking is an interesting aspect of memory when you can kind of like dissolve things into. So when I would study music and we have to learn these like long sequences of like measures and chords and that sort of thing. One of the ways to sort of navigate it was I would sort of break it into big chunks. You're like, okay, here's like the A section, here's the B section, and then here's the A section again, and that sort of thing. And then it's such that the number of chunks was relatively small, that I could like kind of fit all the chunks at that abstraction layer into my brain at the same time. So it was like 7 might be a good number for that. And but then that, like that wasn't enough, right? I have to also like have the chunks be broken into smaller chunks, right? So you can have repeat this process recursively so that you get until you get to like the like very specific things, like put your hand on this key at this time with these other like fingers on these keys. So that way it's sort of like it's always organized, and so that you don't have to hold the whole thing in your head all at once. And this is like, I mean, people memorize like the Quran or the Bible, like these are like really long books, and like how do they do that? It's not because they have like extraordinary working memory sizes like Kevin was talking about. It's because they've got a good organization where they can put things into the working memory and pull them out without too much trouble. I mean, I think they're both important, but with repetition, I feel like there's kind of an optimal repetition. Like, you can repeat it too much, and you kind of just, like, it becomes noise. It's like, it just becomes part of the background. You're just, like, if you're trying to learn a new language sometimes, you just might try repeating the same word over and over, like a mantra. And it can kind of lose its meaning after a while, and studies indicate that it's not really the best way to learn things. And likewise, if you repeat them too infrequently, you know, it's sort of like relearning the whole thing over and over again. So it just takes more iterations before you can like feel solid in that memory. So there is kind of like, and I think people probably have different optimal frequencies. It's like, you know, should I rehearse this once a day or should I rehearse this once a week? And I think that it's important, but variety is also important, that if it's like stagnant, because, you know, bringing back to evolution, there's like, you know, this idea of survival of the fittest is like, kind of, you know, it's like a useful heuristic. That was like the first level of understanding, but more and more it's more about like if you want to survive as a species, you want to make the other species depend on you, right? You want to make yourself valuable to other species, and this sort of thing also applies in business, right? You know, like you want to make money, make yourself valuable to other people, so then they give you money to do things for them, and then it's the same sort of thing happens in memory. It's like it's like survival of the most connectedness, connectedest. So if you can associate your memory that you want to remember with lots of other things, then it'll indirectly get referenced by all kinds of different things. Because it's like, right, every word you use is defined by a whole bunch of other words. So it's sort of every time you say a word, you're actually sort of lighting up a bunch of other semantic areas. And so if you want it, you can sort of indirectly remind yourself of something by associating it with things. So like, what's a good example of this? It's like, I wanted to learn, like a memory palace. That's a technique that like ancient Greek orators would use. Where they say, like, okay, I've got this long speech I'm trying to memorize. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take something I already know about, which is like my path from like here to the temple or whatever. And then I'm for each step of the path, which I'm already familiar with, I'm going to associate a part of the the speech. And so that way it's sort of like tethering it. And so every time I walk along this thing, I have this sort of like skeleton that's indirectly reminding me of this speech. And if I'm ever lost in the speech where I am, there's something that's strong nearby that's like very deeply connected. And so it's like having a hub nearby. You like fly into Houston, you know, to get to another city. Does that kind of make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so this. But with the creativity can, you know, and like variety, I think you can do a lot of different things. Like with music, if I wanted to like learn a piece, a lot of times I would just look at the chord progression, and then sort of remember that, which is usually a lot easier because it's like just a short sequence, and then improvise over it. So just like make up a song that kind of has the same chords as the one I'm trying to learn, but like I get to sort of make up things. And then you can do that at another level, not just like the chord progressions, but you can say like the figurations, like, oh, there's like this shape I kind of like when the melody does this, and like da da da, I like that. And then so I kind of like, you know, improvise, but put that shape in a lot. Or you can take like that whole, you know, if you're reading the music, you can take that piece and then transpose it into a different key. So it's like you keep all the same relative relationships between things, but then just like scoot them somewhere else so it's a different bass point. And so all these ways are just sort of like different angles. Or you can also do things like learn it backwards. That's actually, I found, like, if you're trying to memorize a long piece of text, if you like memorize the last paragraph, then the second to last paragraph, then the third to last paragraph, you're sort of always going towards certainty. You know, so it's like the most solid thing is the thing at the end. And it's because there's definitely if you know, when you're stressed out and afraid, particularly if you're like in a performance area, if it's like a test or like musical performance or theater or something, you know, you get this stress hormones, you get cortisol, which doesn't, which directly interferes with high level brain functioning. So it's like it's like when you're freaking out at a test, it is directly antagonizing your ability to remember the things you're trying to remember, and so by putting the familiar things at the end, it's sort of like you're always just like kind of sliding downhill. You know, like, oh, yeah, it's like the first part was a little weird, but now it's getting easier, it's getting easier, it's getting easier. And so it becomes a sort of like self-fulfilling prophecy of high performance.
Let's wrap it up a little bit.
Tie the tethers.
Yeah, so what's the way to tie it together? I have a working definition of memory, which is that it's like the union of information with some kind of like physical medium. Right, so it's like it's either like capacitors or neurons or a, you know, paper, and so because the information is kind of like, you know, you can run one program on one computer on another computer. It's like it's sort of it doesn't really care where it lives. It just has to live somewhere, and I think that, yeah, like how much money is spent on like education. And like, how much of that is just like repeating things so that you remember them, right? And so if we can like make a small improvement in how well we can manage our own memories, we can like really dramatically change the efficiency of our lives and spend time on more fun things than just like rereading things that we couldn't remember. So, yeah. Anyway, that's basically it.
First and foremost, I would like to give a shout out to Chris for giving such a wonderful talk on memory and information. Secondly, I'd like to give a shout out to Kevin and his roommates for letting us use the wonderful facilities up here in Bonnie Doon Mountains. Thirdly, I'd like to thank the universe for helping me to follow through with something instead of actually just talking about something. I'm actually being about it. And on that note, I'd like to say you can follow me at facebook.com/positiveherpes, Instagram, Twitter, and now Periscope at Positive Herpes. You can email me positiveherpes@gmail.com. Also, my last shout out would have to be to Lucas, Ohio. Thank you for letting me use your music for the last couple weeks for my episodes. I've been featuring music off of Lucas Ohio's album titled The Slingshot Kid. You can catch him this weekend in 4 days, Saturday, June 20th, at Armando's in Martinez. You can go to his website at lucasohio.com. And without further ado, today's song, Golden Roads.
Your family. My brother took his bride last year. I'll kick a rock in summer, hope to see a smile. Will you always laugh hard in the morning before coffee's been made?
From home.